Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear oral argument from Relators and Global Services versus Bianco.
May it please the court, Eugene Wilshire Jr. will present argument for Relators. Relators are reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I'm here today on behalf of four Relators Global Services, Inc., and three of their executive officers, Steve Iver, Mike Miller, and Al Beer. We are here today seeking to have this court set aside an order that was entered on the basis of evidence that, as I stand before you today, we still have not seen. That order, under the proof produced at the trial court, requires my clients as a group to produce documents that the evidence shows they do not have. This order as entered is so broad that it vitiates any opportunity by freezing discovery to prepare any type of meaningful defense or to prosecute a counterclaim that they have against the respondent, Mr. Yu, for theft and for use of their proprietary property.
Do you have a trial date?
We had a trial date, Your Honor. That case was passed pending this mandamus. I'm advised it may be set again in May.
Thank you.
We've also been denied, at least to this point, the right to rebut continual allegations that my clients and their counsel have destroyed evidence, secreted evidence, and filed false discovery responses before the trial court. In short, Your Honors, we contend that this sanction motion and its attendant freeze based upon an order that cannot be complied with essentially adjudicates the merits of Mr. Yu's claim on the basis of a sanctions order entered without an evidentiary hearing of any sort. This order had its genesis when Mr. Yu, after having had available to him documents, approximately 300,000 pages of documents available to him for over a month, as a matter of fact, over 6 weeks, he and his counsel spent approximately a day and a half looking at them, filed a motion to compel when she asserted that my clients had documents in their possession that they had not produced. They were unsupported for duplicate comments about destruction and secretion. And in his original motion, he admitted what we had long suspected, that he had in his possession some amount, as yet we do not know, of the business records of Global Services, Inc., which he had no right to have. Mr. Yu had been discharged from Global Services because he could not explain his participation in, or his apparition in, a rather sophisticated theft scheme in which bogus purchase orders were used to be sent to global suppliers in order to have computer components delivered, not to Global, but to a different site where the person who prepared the bogus purchase orders then went to that site, in this instance that we know about, a Federal Express office, and picked up computers that had been ordered under a bogus purchase order and delivered for Global to pay for. He filed this order and accompanied it with a two-paragraph affidavit in which Mr. Yu said, attached here to are some documents that are what they purport to be. And these documents are not being shown to the defense counsel. And of course, what those documents are, as I've previously stated, we don't know.
Are those documents currently subject to a protective order?
No, they are not, Your Honor. They are sealed in this record.
And but the court entered no protective order covering those documents?
He reviewed, no, he did, no, there was no right. This is not an instance, and we pointed this out in our brief repeatedly, this is not an instance in which these are documents that are claimed to be subject to some type of privilege. These are documents in and of themselves, under, I presume, their attempt to comply with the GTE case, to prove that, one, we had documents, and two, we hadn't produced them. We responded by objecting to the admission of this evidence. We filed a detailed response setting out what we believe to be the law then, and we don't believe it's changed. And we provided three detailed affidavits that are in the record before this court, in which Mr. Miller, Mr. Iger, and Mr. Vieira, each and every one of them said in detail, you know, we haven't destroyed anything. We, to the best of our knowledge, anything that we have that can be produced has been produced. Those affidavits stand unrebutted in the record. When it became obvious that we, the Global, was having its proprietary documents abused, under the ancillary procedures of Harris County, a request for a temporary injunction was filed requesting that a hearing be held, that Mr. Yu bring those documents, and that injunctive evidence be entered. At that hearing, after discussion with Judge Bianchi, off the bench, the ancillary judge, Judge O'Neill, came back out and said, and the exact statement is quoted in the brief, Judge Bianchi is going to hear this motion for temporary injunction. You'll get a hearing. And of course, we did not get a hearing, as the court knows. And we have been denied a hearing on that temporary injunction. We simply say that to the extent that it can be said that Judge Bianchi exercised any discretion, that he abused it. We believe that this is clearly a case in which mandamus is proper under repeated and recent holdings of this court. We have here, we submit, Your Honors, not just one, but a series of unreasonable and arbitrary orders imposed upon our clients that are clear and prejudicial errors of law.
Counsel, this seems to me, maybe I don't understand the case, but to the extent that I understand it, and help me if I'm wrong, this is a pretty fact-intensive case. You're saying the documents that you're being asked to produce do not exist, and counsel says, yes, they do exist, and we've got evidence that you submitted that you kept some documents by. How can we, in a mandamus context, deal with such a record where the dispute is so great?
Your Honor, first, I don't think it's necessarily a fact dispute. First, this court has to decide whether or not under Remington Arms there was any evidence to support the claim that we have unproduced documents when, in contravention of this court's opinion, secret evidence was presented to the trial court that we haven't seen. That, we submit in and of itself a sufficient basis for mandamus to issue. Second, Your Honor.
Well let's look at that.
All right.
If we would look at that, and the other side says, this proves that you have withheld documents. You made a tender of documents, which was incomplete. And this packet that we have, that we submitted to the court, shows that you held back some documents. Doesn't that cut against you?
No, I don't think it cuts against me at all, Your Honor, because I don't think that's competent evidence. I don't think that's anything that a trial court can consider until it at least allowed me the opportunity to review it, until he at least knows it's genuine. I haven't seen these documents, but I submit that it can't be said with any degree of certainty these are even genuine documents.
Have you seen excerpts from the documents?
I have only seen what is in the motion itself, which paraphrases the documents to some degree. And I will tell you that I have grave doubts about it. Remember, we're dealing in the computer age. People create and uncreate documents on a moment's notice. I thought it was interesting that we have not, that although I am told that at least some of these documents are invoices, we weren't given invoice numbers. which would have been one way that we might have been able to ascertain if it was possibly a legitimate. I don't even have any idea as I stand here how many documents there were. But if I can return and focus just for a moment on Justice Gonzalez's question. The question would be, Your Honor, as a matter of law, too, whether there was any evidence under the GDE case that we have the document. All we know from the uncontroverted evidence is that Mr. Yoon has documents that he says belong to my client, and he says there's at least some of them are originals. The fact that he has a document, if it is any evidence at all, it is evidence that we don't have it. It is not an evidence-intensive matter. First, because one, I contend that he presented no evidence, and two, if he presented any evidence, the only evidence that he has supports our position.
But he has copies of documents that he failed to produce.
That is not at all what I understand the record to show, Your Honor, with all respect. He says he has original documents. No proof that we have the originals of anything. And again, I haven't seen them, so I'm a bit at a disadvantage. But repeatedly, and that testimony is stated in our brief, it was admitted during the aborted of temporary injunction hearing that Mr. Hume has originals. So it seems to me that if there's any evidence here, if you can say there's any evidence, it is that we do not have the documents. But even further than that, we have three unrebutted affidavits saying that we don't have the documents.
Given the nature of the dispute, where opposing counsel is going to get up and say, you can, if it's in brief, you can comply by at any time by producing the documents, and he said, no, we can't because we don't have them. How can we say that there's no adequate remedy by appeal? How can you, don't you have a remedy?
No, Your Honor, because I've been precluded from, one, taking any discovery whatsoever. This is a slander case and a Sabine-Pilots claim for wrongful termination. As we stand here today, the record will not reveal anywhere what was supposed to have been said, who said it, when, or to who. Second, under the Sabine-Pilots case, we have no idea what this man claims he was ordered to do that was in violation of the law.
He says that he was forced to take part in the tax fraud, insurance fraud, and customs fraud. A scheme, participated in a scheme.
Why don't you just depose him? I am precluded from deposing, Your Honor, under the order. I have tried to depose him, you know, for well over a year.
Why send him some interrogatories?
I cannot.
Request,
I can't do anything.
Request some documents.
I can't request documents. As a matter of fact, I've been precluded from even pursuing a temporary injunction where these documents, And I suppose the other 12 to 13 banker's boxes that he claims to have would also be in the courtroom where I could look at it.
Mr. Wilshire, your primary complaint is that you have not had an opportunity to confront the documents that the court is relying on for the entry of its order of sanctions against you. Is that your primary complaint?
I have several primary complaints. That is certainly one of them. As we said in the briefs, we think something of this type, as a matter of law, requires a full-blown evidentiary hearing with the right to confront witnesses, and that to the extent that it is evidentiary, we must have a full and complete record that can be evaluated, and that everyone has an opportunity. I say, Your Honor,
if the documents themselves that come in a hearing, you have the opportunity to confront the documents, and the documents do show, as they're alleged to show, that you have, your client had at least in one time in their possession these documents, and these documents had not otherwise been produced. Would, under the record as it now exists before the trial court, would the trial court have the discretion to determine that your client is not telling the truth and to foreclose further discovery on your client's behalf?
I do not believe so. First, because I don't think that hypothetical, as I understand your facts, Justice Enum, would be sufficient under the GTE case to justify a finding that we, in fact, have the documents today. Second of all, I think under Transamerica that there would be many, there are an infinite number of more appropriate penalties. And three, I think your hypothetical presumes that that hearing would show who should be sanctioned. We have four different defendants, and there's no showing as to any of these particular defendants. We're dealing in a company, the record shows, has over $140,000 a day in invoicing. 100,000 invoices or so per day per issue.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I think we've also said under some circumstances the sanction may be more appropriate against the lawyer as opposed to the client. Is there any way under this record for the to assess whether it's the lawyer or the client here?
I don't know.
Any other questions? Thank you. Court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Kenneth Cole Jr. will present argument for the real party in interest, Tavis Yu.
Good morning, Your Honors. Happy New Year. I guess that my thoughts as I listened to what Mr. Wilshire was saying was that first I needed to let Your Honors know what this case is not. This is not a death penalty case where their pleadings have been stricken or anything like that. So it is not a situation where he can stand before this court today and tell you that there is no way that he will ever be able to have a record to bring up on appeal so that he can achieve an adequate remedy on appeal.
Well, if, with all due respect, counsel, isn't this tantamount to a death penalty case? Because if opposing counsel cannot depose or have any type of discovery or learn in any way the nature and the basis of the allegations that you're making against them, you know, how are they to proceed to how can they prepare for trial?
In a sense,
will they not be blindsided by hearing evidence for the first time at trial?
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
They
that,
will.
That very well could happen.
Isn't that tantamount to death penalty?
In a sense, yes, very analogous, Your Honor. And the important distinction or difference is this. In this situation, they have the right and the opportunity to correct this problem, because this is a problem that was predicted by us at the time the lawsuit was filed.
How can they correct it?
They can correct it, Your Honor, by producing the documents in question.
What if they don't have it?
Then they would, at that point, need to admit that the documents did exist at one time and explain what happened to them.
How can they do that if they've never seen the documents?
In this way, Your Honor, what Judge Bianchi did in his order, the order that is in question, which we refer to as the second order, is he said they are temporarily stopped from doing discovery. And he also said in that order, under I believe it's paragraph 4, Your Honor, that I was going to be allowed to take the deposition of a corporate representative with the most knowledge with regard to these documents, where they were, what's happened to them, where they are now. At that point in time is when the relators decided to rush off to the appellate courts with this mandamus proceeding. And so, because I did not want to proceed with the discovery that I am allowed to do, and in fact it's been put in the order for me to do, I did not want to do that until all the appellate courts had an opportunity to tell us what we should be doing at this point in time.
You're at a bit of a disadvantage as a party trying to prove that you have produced all the documents that have been requested among the 300,000 pages or however many there are. When you can't see the ones that the other side says aren't in there.
Yes, sir. And when I take their corporate representative's deposition, at that point in time, I anticipate that they will see documents that we have copies of.
For the first time.
Why haven't you given to him before now?
Because here's our concern on that, Your Honor. That is the crux of what is going on in this discovery dispute. Our concern is and always has been, and it is replete throughout this multi-volume appendix. If you look at any of the pleadings we filed, from the very beginning of this case, we've been telling Judge Bianchi that our concern is this. My client was fired because he refused to participate in illegal activity. And he said, I'm not going to do anything illegal. They fired him.
And so these people, my client believes, and based on the conduct they've exhibited before Judge Bianchi throughout discovery so far in this case, they have proven that they are the kind of people that would demand someone perform illegal activity.
Why?
Kind
tell
of
me again why you didn't go forward with the deposition and resolve this issue.
Because we started this all of these mandamus proceedings, Your
Honor. Why would that prevent you from going forward under Judge Bianchi's order and doing and resolving this?
It did not prevent me from doing that. I could have proceeded. I made the strategical decision that I wanted to wait until the mandamus proceedings were complete before I deposed their corporate representative.
To what end? What did you need to know from us that would affect your decision to depose the corporate representative in Indol?
Well, without, Your Honor, trying to sound like I'm blowing smoke up my own skirt or anything like that, I wanted to try to be fair to the other side. Because if they're right, then I've got them over a barrel, but I shouldn't be allowed to have them over. I don't think they're right. I don't believe they're right. And I think that the Texas law is real clear that what Judge Bianchi has done is absolutely correct.
What is the source of Judge Bianchi's power to freeze discovery like this?
Rule 215, Your Honor.
So it's a sanction?
It is, yes, Your Honor.
Based on an ex parte in-camera submission without a hearing?
That is what relators would have this court believe and would have this court characterize what has occurred as being, Your Honor.
That's a question to you.
It is not an ex parte communication that has been prohibited by any rule of civil procedure or case law that I am aware of.
Is it authorized by any rule? And does it, or does it run into Remington Arms versus Canales and Chapa versus Garcia?
It does not, Your Honor. In Remington Arms versus Canales, the court held that an affidavit submitted in camera to establish a claimed privilege that would have prevented discovery of documents, that was not going to be allowed because the right to cross-examine should be allowed in that situation. We're not claiming any privilege to these documents.
Why is it any different?
It's different, Your Honor, because our concern, and this gets back to your question, Your Honor, my concern and my client's concern has been that as soon as the relators know what documents we have copies of, to the extent that documents are produced in this case that will prove my client's claims of their illegal activity, they will only at that point produce documents that they know we already have, and that any other documents which exist at that point will never see the light of day again. And so Judge Bianchi is simply attempting to...
But you have them, so how will they not see the light of day?
We don't, as is indicated in the briefs, certainly in the trial court level, and I believe here, Your Honor, we do not have all of the documents that my client knows exist and are in the defendant's possession. And it was those documents. See, it's a question, Your Honor, of the trial judge saying not that anybody's going to be permanently denied discovery. Judge Bianchi is simply attempting to control the method, timing, and manner that the discovery will occur so that they have to produce
them. A party comes in and he says, I know they've got documents they won't produce. And the other side says, well, Judge, let us ask them what documents. No, he can't do that. Well, Judge, we say we've already produced everything we've got. Well, not listening to that. Well, how does the judge determine that one side is right or not when the other side can't ask any questions or put on any evidence?
I think that is, Your Honor, the answer to that is why trial judges and juries are often called fact finders, because they are the ones who have to find the facts and have to judge the credibility of the litigants to determine who is being honest, truthful, and
based on a one-sided explanation. The opposing counsel really hadn't had a chance to contest what you submitted to Judge Bianchi, has it?
With regard to exhibits A and B that were submitted for in-camera inspection, no, Your Honor.
And isn't that just fundamental that in an adversary system, we let both sides take a shot at it and try to let the fact finder make a decision based upon a full presentation of the evidence?
And at trial, that would happen, and I am
but
sure
not
that
in
Judge
discovery.
No, it will happen, Your Honor. The problem with this situation is the discovery in this case was just stopped in midstream with the mandamus proceedings. What should
that
have
was your choice, counsel, wasn't it?
It was my choice not to move forward with the deposition of their corporate representative.
Which could have mooted this whole proceeding.
Possibly, Your Honor.
Is there any direct evidence that the the defendants have withheld documents that actually exist. Did your client put that in his affidavit? Is there any direct evidence anywhere that could form a basis for Bianchi's conclusion or a conclusion that documents that do exist or have existed are being withheld by the defendants?
Yes, Your Honor, and the affidavit of my client is contained at pages 27 and 28 of the first volume of the appendix.
And does he affirmatively state in that affidavit that the defendants are currently withholding documents that they have in their possession?
What he states in that affidavit is what he's able to state, Your Honor. It's not your exact words. What he says is, I worked for them. When I was working for them, I saw documents similar in nature to the documents that are Exhibit B in the in-camera inspection. And I went to the document production where they produced these 300,000, they say, pages of documents, and they weren't there. So my client does not know, and I do not know, if those documents currently exist in the relator's possession or if they have already been destroyed.
Another logical inference that could be made from what you just said, though, is the documents that your client's mistaken and the documents don't exist. Isn't that one of the logical inferences? Either he thought he saw documents like this and they don't exist, or else he did see documents like that which have now been destroyed. And those are the types of inferences that the judge needs to draw based upon a full presentation of the evidence at an adversarial hearing, isn't it?
I think that's absolutely correct, and I think Judge Bianchi has done exactly that, Your Honor, because what he has done is, if you'll let me tell you this, in my motion for sanctions, I told Judge Bianchi that if you need more evidence other than what I've already submitted in camera, I will submit everything we have for an in-camera inspection. If you need an evidentiary hearing, then we request that you tell us that you want to have that. And Judge Bianchi didn't need that. He looked at the documents we had submitted in camera, along with not just that, Your Honor, but the entire course of conduct in this case.
The right in an adversarial hearing is not the judge's right, is it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It's not the judge's right that is at stake. Whether the judge needs a hearing or not is not the question. It's whether the party has a right to the hearing.
I certainly think that is an issue, and the answer to that issue, Your Honor, is that they are not entitled to a hearing in this situation. The rules are very clear that a motion for sanctions under Rule 215 and the case law that interprets it says that a hearing is not required with regard to a motion for sanctions in the sense of an evidentiary hearing or an oral hearing or a personal appearance before the judge. A hearing, as worded in our Rule of Civil Procedure 215, includes a hearing that is conducted by submission, which is what occurred.
Assuming you're correct, wouldn't that be somewhat different when the adverse party doesn't know what evidence has been offered against them and is unable, because they haven't been able to see it, to confront that evidence and to question?
I believe that Judge Bianchi would have to address that issue in his mind based upon the totality of circumstances which exist, which is one of the standards of review that this court has announced, that what the trial court has to do to avoid an abuse of discretion is to make sure that based on the totality of circumstances that exist, the trial court has operated under the guiding principles and rules and done something that is both allowed by the rules and that accomplishes a purpose intended to be accomplished by the rules.
Do we have the camera inspection?
They are supposed to be here, Your Honor. I have not reviewed the court's file to confirm that, but a motion was filed by relators and granted that those documents would be a part of the record for appeal.
Ms. Cole, would your concerns have all been met by a simple order from the trial judge that you don't have to produce those documents until Global produces its witness that you designate at the time of that deposition? Would have all of your concerns all been satisfied if the order had simply set up the timing of the production of those documents to coincide with the deposition of whoever you designate of their party to appear and talk?
As I stand here, Your Honor, I believe that an order of that nature would have accomplished my major purpose.
So, and that wouldn't necessarily be a sanction. That'd just simply be the court recognizing you raised some protection concerns about these documents in order to solve this particular problem. Court, go ahead and ask your clients all the questions they want to, but you don't have to produce the documents until their witness comes. Well, to go beyond that remedy for your concern, for the court to actually say, I'm going to punish Global for their conduct in failing to produce these documents. I don't understand what concerns you have that would deprive Global of the opportunity to be confronted by the very documents that the court says proves their guilt. What concept, what
the only thing that's at issue, Your Honor, is our concern, which has been borne out by their conduct, that documents, if they have not already been destroyed, will be destroyed as soon as they know what we already have copies of. So that's the crucial issue that we have been concerned with from the very beginning in this case.
I still don't understand. If you have copies of them, what difference does it make if they destroy them?
It doesn't make any difference if they destroy the documents that we have copies of, Your Honor, because we'll still have the evidence. The issue here is that my client, while he was still employed with them, when it became apparent to him that he was going to be fired, observed other documents similar in nature to the ones that we have. He knows they exist, or at least did at the time, prior to the time that he was fired. And those are the documents that have not been produced by Mr. Wilson's clients.
But I don't understand how you're ever going to get those without identifying what they are, which you say raises the risk that they'll be destroyed.
The only way that would be done specifically, Your Honor, is when the corporate representative's deposition is taken, when they are confronted with the documents that we do have copies of, and then have to either admit that these other documents exist and have not been produced, or existed at a point in time in the past and have been destroyed, with whatever explanation they at that point in time desire to offer as to why the documents were destroyed.
But how are they in any lesser position to do that if you just show them the documents there?
The only way I know of, Your Honor, is if Judge Bianchi is allowed to tell them, you can suffer the greater consequence of not being allowed to do any discovery until you do what I've told you to do.
Well, but you don't know whether they've done that. Judge Bianchi had no way of knowing whether that's happened.
I believe that he did, Your Honor, with due respect to your position on that, for this reason. Judge Bianchi had an opportunity to review all of the conduct of the defendant and to then review the documents that were presented for in-camera inspection, and he was very much in the position to sit there and say, somebody's been caught with their pants down here, and I'm going to make sure that they do what the rules and my previous orders require them to do, and I'm not going to let them get away with this anymore.
That's where I'm unclear. You would concede, I assume, that you have the burden of proving in a non-production case that there has been, in fact, non-production.
Yes, sir.
You concede that much.
I do.
And so far, the only evidence that you have pointed us to of non-production is an affidavit from your client that says, when I worked at this place, I saw documents like this. There's no step further that says those documents still exist and are not being produced. Is there anything in the record? You keep talking about the totality of the circumstances and the defendant's conduct. What specific evidence out of all of that would satisfy your burden that there has been no production?
I believe that burden has been satisfied by an eyewitness's testimony through Mr. Hughes' affidavit that the documents were seen by him, and his testimony that he went to the document production, and his testimony that the documents were not produced at that time. Now, is that evidence direct evidence, uncontroverted evidence, that I saw them, I was an eyewitness, and saw the relators shred the documents? No.
And you're aware of the case
law? I'll never have evidence.
And you're aware of the case law that says that's not enough? Is there anything else? You keep talking about the defendant's conduct. Anything else that would have indicated to Judge Bianchi that, in fact, documents that exist have either been destroyed or not produced after they were called for and discovered?
I would point, the only thing I can think of in this record that you could look at in that regard, Your Honor, is in our second motion to compel, there was a detailed chart that we put together several pages long, which shows the request for production that's in question. There's 13 of them. The request for production, what was asked for, their first response, their second response, and then a fourth column that shows what the in-camera documents prove. And, Your Honor, if you will look at that, you will see, yes, that there is evidence that would establish, and apparently, at least for Judge Bianchi and three justices of appeals, including the Chief Justice of the First District, proved to their satisfaction that what we say has, in fact, occurred, and the documents have not.
Is opposing counsel correct that there's no description of the documents?
Well, there are 13 requests for production, Your Honor, that we believe very specifically describe what it is that they need to produce to us. And in fact, Your Honor, and this is directly the point of what you're asking, when they filed objections to those requests for production, they did not file objections at the beginning, at least, when the 30 days was running, that those requests were vague anyway. It was only after they had then been ordered by the judge to produce everything because he found they had not, that they then started arguing, wait a minute, all this stuff is too vague. We just don't know what we're being asked to produce.
These requests for production include the documents that are filed in camera with the court. And as I understand your argument, you do not want to disclose to the other side at this time exactly what has been filed with the court for fear that that's all that they will produce.
That's correct.
And they might destroy other documents that are subject to production.
And based on the law, Your Honor, the case law, that's a very important aspect of this that I think this court should consider, and that is, does what Judge Bianchi has said in his order accomplish permissible goals that are to be accomplished by enforcement of the Texas Civil Procedure? And that's what Judge Bianchi is trying to do in a very tough situation.
So in essence, this boils down to your trying to use this order to smoke out these documents that you don't know, documents that you're not really sure actually exist, but you are suspicious that they exist, and Judge Bianchi is suspicious that they may exist based upon the resistance of the defendant to earlier discovery attempts.
I would agree to that with this exception, Your Honor. I can't speak as to Judge Bianchi and how he feels in terms of whether he is just suspicious or if he believes that in fact they exist and have not been produced. I would suspect from his orders that he feels that they have not been produced. I can speak for myself.
I don't know the difference between a suspicion and a belief, but...
And maybe it's a matter of degree. I can certainly speak for myself, Your Honor. These documents exist. They have them, and they know exactly what we're looking for. And if you have an opportunity to look at the documents that have been submitted for the in-camera inspection, you will understand exactly what I'm talking about.
And how do we know they're authentic, counsel?
Because Mr. Hughes' affidavit authenticates them, Your Honor.
So a party who has mentioned the lawsuit authenticates his own documents? I mean, is that our adversary process?
I guess the answer is yes, Your Honor. I mean, just as if a party, a defendant in a case, testified that documents were their business records.
In this day and age, when they can do a very good job of counterfeit passports, counterfeit Social Security cards, counterfeit driver's license, counterfeit immigration cards, it's not beyond the realm of possibility we can have counterfeit documents.
And I will now divulge something that you're forcing me to, Your Honor, and I'm walking that tightrope because I still don't want to tell them any more than I absolutely have to, although I am before y'all, and obviously will answer your questions completely. One of the in-camera documents that is in question, keeping in mind Mr. Bulsher's statement that documents get computer-generated and ungenerated all the time, is a handwritten document by one of the defendants in his own handwriting in black and white. And if the court will review that document, you will understand exactly why Judge Bianchi did what he did.
How do we know that it's the signature of the person who purported to have written it?
Because Mr. Hughes' affidavit.
Is it an original?
The document submitted for in-camera inspection was an outstanding
result. So by looking at it, we should say it's not a forgery. Just by looking at it, we say it's not a forgery.
I think someone like Mr. Yu, who worked 18 years for Global Services and has reviewed and read multitudes of handwritten memos by that individual? Yes. He is certainly someone who can say that is that individual's handwriting.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I've heard repeatedly throughout the respondent's statement talk about course of conduct. Course of conduct in this was that an initial request for production was filed, objections and responses were made to that initial request. The objections were overruled. We believe those objections were wrong, but for example, Judge Miyake required our clients to produce their personal banking records for 3 years and their personal income tax records for 3 years. We produced them. We didn't want to fight anymore. These documents, and it's in the record, were available to Mr. Yoo and his counsel on February the 21st. They went over 5 weeks without even making any effort to look at them. They spent a day and a half, and then I have to hear counsel's testimony that he knows we've got things that we can't find. And I key off just a moment about now, I find out that we've got some memorandum in the handwriting of someone. Where's the original of that document? Where's there any evidence in this record that we have the original of that document? And how can Judge Bianchi have any idea how to interpret, and I don't know what it would say, but can he be fairly said to have interpreted a handwritten, cryptic, inter-office memorandum about a company that employed 300 people, it's the largest office product distributor, I believe, in the state of Texas? Sounds like you know what he's talking about, because he didn't describe it in that great of detail.
My notes, Your Honor, were that it was a handwritten note by one of the handwritten.
You say handwritten inter-office memorandum.
Well, I'm assuming that's what it was. He said memorandum, I had inter-office. But I will tell you, as an officer of this court, I haven't seen it. I don't know what he's talking about, and I don't know what it said.
Did you know before today that existed and whose it was?
No, I don't know if I stand here today who wrote it. I've never seen it.
You've never been told specifically that there is a handwritten.
This is, he says, I heard counsel say, I'm going to say this for the first time.
Okay.
And it's the first time I've heard it in this litigation. There was a reference to an invoice in his request for production, and literally hours were spent tracking every conceivable possibility to find that invoice, and we couldn't find it. It just could not be found, and the affidavit substantiated that. He has the original of it, and we must remember that his wife was in charge of Global's document destruction. Documents are kept, used in the business, and then computerized, and then put on microfiche, and the hard copies are destroyed on a routine basis.
Whose wife?
Mr. Yoo's wife.
Is she still there?
No, we had to let her go in connection with when Mr. Yoo's being terminated because of his inability to explain the computer.
But she is not a plaintiff.
She is not a plaintiff in the lawsuit, but it is in the record and in the affidavits. And she was, in fact, in charge of Global's document shredding. Once they went on to microfiche, she was in charge of implementing the procedures to see that the documents themselves were destroyed. I also find it interesting to say that there was direct evidence in this case. I submit to Your Honors that I can't find direct evidence as good here as it was in the GTE case. At least there was a live witness there who testified under oath that it was inconceivable to him that this document didn't exist. All we have in this record is Mr. Yoo's statement that at some time, I don't believe the record will support the statement that he saw them just before he left. I think if you'll look at that affidavit, you'll say that he saw them. And as we submit, Your Honor, that this order should be vacated.
Is there any record maintained of documents that are destroyed in the course of business? As I understand, I haven't read the affidavit, but as I understand the affidavit, so he saw these in possession of Global. He has copies of some of these, which he has produced in camera for the court that he acquired during the course of his employment, apparently at Global. He came into possession of them somehow. He wants not only the ones that he's in possession of produced, but all the others that he maintains that he saw, and among what was produced, they do not exist. Has Global provided any record of destroyed documents?
Two questions, Your Honor. I don't believe his affidavit says that he saw any other documents. He says he saw documents similar to the ones that he has in his own possession. The answer to your question is yes, there is a document retention policy. That document retention policy was available to Mr. Yu, and at the time of production, I can't quote it to you chapter and verse, but documents are kept in hard form for a specific period of time.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Court will take another brief recess.
Your Honor, please rise.